What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here. Drance, of course, covers the Canucks at The Athletic as well. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in Step 650. 650 is, of course, the Dunbar Lumber text line, and we are less than 24 hours away from unrestricted free agency opening in the NHL tomorrow at 9 a.m. when we'll be on the air, by the way.
Would you say we are 20 hours and 57 minutes
about
away?
That, yeah, roughly about that. Yeah. 57, 45 seconds in there. Yeah.
Now 40 seconds.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
But so who's counting?
Exciting. Should we just count down for the rest of the show? It's all very exciting. Lots of stuff happening, and we've got a lot to dig into, of course, because
30 seconds, Mark.
Since we last spoke, the Canucks drafted a new first round prospect despite their best efforts to avoid doing so. They drafted Braden Coutts in the first round. They made a whole bunch of other picks on day two of the draft as well, in something of a rarity for them. So there's a draft class to dig into. There's a whole host of reports out there, some new contracts for RFA and Abbotsford guys that we can get into. There's a lot going on at this time of the calendar. Ian McIntyre will join us at 12:30. We'll talk about a lot of it with him too. Oh, I should mention Dev Camp starts today at UBC as well. So we'll see if there's any notable audio coming out of the proceedings at UBC for the Canucks prospects. So look, we'll get into all of that. We want to take your text, 650, 650 as well. I think we should start by kind of setting the table for what the next 24 hours going into the start of free agency might look like for the Canucks. And this is a fascinating moment because we had spent more than 2 months since the Canucks regular season ended and since we heard from Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin at the end of the regular season, heard how intent Jim Rutherford was on the team improving their center depth, but not just their depth, right? Like their high end value at the center position, their high end value at forward at the top of the lineup. That was a clear-cut, no doubt about it, priority for the team. And now we're here. And of course, we all looked at the 15th overall pick as the key trade chip potentially in helping to realize that, or at least helping to realize part of it. Now we're here on June 30th. The draft has passed. They made the pick. They didn't execute a trade. And not only that, you know, Matt Duchene, who was one of their top targets, he's off the board. A lot of other centers that we didn't even necessarily think they would be in on, but they're off the board as well. It's starting to get really difficult to see what the path is to executing the vision that Jim Rutherford initially laid out. Now, I think there's some really interesting dominoes from that. Like that doesn't what I just said, right? Oh, it's going to be hard to execute the vision. That actually doesn't necessarily have to be a wholly negative thing. And we can get into some of the kind of the consequences of what not executing that vision might be, positive and negative. But from where we stand, is it like,
well, I'm sitting.
Yeah, fair enough. From where we sit here now, what are we still 21 hours and
55 minutes in 4-3-2-1
mark. There we go. Very good. From where we sit here, is it fair to say that kind of the book is closed on like plan A, aggressively remodel the top six of the Canucks? That was offseason plan A. Is it over now?
The reimagining of the Canucks forward group?
Yeah.
I don't believe it's over, Jamie, because I'm not comfortable betting a single cent against the Vancouver Canucks making a win now move. Ever.
That's fair.
That said, if you go read my latest at The Athletic, titled What I'm Hearing About Pew Suter's Market and the Canucks' Approach to Free Agency, I am getting a pretty different vibe from the team itself. And this has been coming, right? I mean, before the end of the season, I started talking about and reporting that the Canucks didn't necessarily believe that the free agent market was likely to yield the sort of impact players that the club clearly needs up front in the wake of the JT Miller trade. And then Jim Rutherford came out and effectively said the same thing and talked about the trade market. The club knew that the trade market would represent doing it the quote-unquote hard way.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that they underestimated how hard it would be. But I do think that the market is shaped up to be, and I would sort of describe it this way. We had the cash crunch in 2020. Then we had the years of cap crunch in the system in, you know, the flat cap era. And now I think we have a talent crunch where too many teams have too much cap space and not enough good players to spend it on. And that's creating this really gummed up market where even cap dump players, as we saw in this market with the Canucks acquiring Evander Kane, but also the Mason Marchment deal. I mean, 2 years ago, those were the types of trades where teams would be paying to get off of those contracts, even though we'd all say that's a good player. Right? Because that's how the market worked 2 years ago. And now, like, even those guys are getting positive returns, right? The moving Nick Hague, the Vegas Golden Knights preferred to get, you know, a bottom six center in Colton Sissons, famous hitter of posts in his hometown against his hometown team, North Vancouver's Colton Sissons, and Jeremy Lauzon, you know, the hits leader, well, former hits leader before he was surpassed by former teammate Kiefer Sherwood. But like, even they're preferring players as opposed to those cap neutral,
as opposed to like pure salary cap space,
right?
From there,
or cap neutral assets, in terms of draft picks and prospects off roster and on and on. So you're seeing teams really value and prioritize talent, and as such, prices are high. Like, prices are really high, and the cost of acquisition is through the roof. And every team wants a second line center. St. Louis, busy hunting for a second line center. Montreal, busy. Vancouver, right? I mean, go down the list. And so to this point, the Canucks haven't been able to get it done. And from what I've been told by, you know, team sources, and I couldn't ferret out specifics, but like, I think there have been moves on the table over the course of the past 4 or 5 days in which the team could have improved this team for the moment, for the short term. But I think the club felt that those deals would have been reckless, given that, you know, the preferred ones would have included things like the 2026 first, Jonathan Lekaramäki, Tom Volander, and or Elias Pettersson Petey Jr., not the centerman.
Right.
And, you know, I think as the club has sort of gone to the books and done the math and done the cost benefit and thought through it, I've detected over the course of this weekend, and I guess it was coming, because it was about 10 days ago I started reporting the pessimism about the front office's view about their ability to execute all of the things that they'd wanted.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that there were conversations with the Canucks coaches that, you know, Adam Foote was comfortable devising game plans to win if he had to play Filipetal as his second line center, right? Like, things that the team's been, I think it would be incorrect to suggest that the team has been caught off guard by this. I think the team had a good sense that unrestricted free agency wasn't going to be hospitable to them anyway. I think they were hopeful that they could make stuff happen on the trade market. And then I think as Patrick Alvin's conversations unfolded across May and June, you know, by the time the Stanley Cup was awarded, I don't think the team had the team was already willing to scale down their ambitions in terms of a complete reimagining of their forward group. And now I'm beginning to hear things like, look, we're a team in transition. We just drafted a draft class. We're really happy with that draft class. You know, quietly, quietly.
The headline, or like the sub-headline in your piece that caught my attention most was the tricky balance and the, quote, quiet rebuild? Question mark. And I was like, whoa, quiet rebuild?
Quietly, this team might be entering a spot where, and it's not a tear it down, obviously. I mean,
no.
They're going to prioritize landing guys like Evander Kane on, you know, for a modest price. They're going to try to extend veteran players, right? They are not going to wave the white flag. They're going to be in on centerman tomorrow. But they're, you know, sort of in contrast with like the Jim Rutherford model in Pittsburgh, where it was just try to win around Crosby every year. I think this club is debating, weighing, trying to remain disciplined about taking the long view with a club that, admittedly, I think they understand they want to be a playoff team, but are they going to be able to land? Like, are you, if you trade your 2026 first and another premium asset for Marco Rossi, are you winning a cup?
No.
Are you measuring up with Vegas once they add Marner, or Edmonton once they add whomever? Hopefully not a local blonde.
Yeah. Whomever. Hint, hint. Nudge, nudge. Oh, man. Wouldn't that be something?
I think we're all fearing it. So, you know, and so sort of as we unfold, as we get toward July 1st here, I think this is the act of tension. The Canucks want to get better. They want to win. They want to improve. Without question. They're behind the scenes, they're trying to be aggressive in doing so. but they're coming on, they keep landing on this side where they want to make sure that they're not making the sorts of moves that tie their hands in the future from landing the really big fish, because they wanted to get a B player. They wanted to do something just to do something. There's pressure on them structurally and in the marketplace to make a difference. And that's where you don't want to make a mistake, right? So, you know, I think they'll, and at some point, I'm sure an insider will probably report something about Pew Suter and the Canucks having had talks and how they've gone today. But I think the Canucks will try one last time there. But are they willing to go to 4.5? Are they willing to go to 5 with term on Pew Suter? Are they willing to go higher than that? Because because that might be where the market is headed on Pew Suter, given Giroux's absence from it and Tavares's absence from it and Brock Nelson's absence from it. I mean, this could not have broken better. I compared it to the inverse of Jose Canseco's 40 time in the piece, right? Like every time you talk to somebody about Pew Suter's market price, it's like 500K higher than it was 2 weeks ago. It's incredible. So this is really broken in his favor. We know he was an August free agent last year. Canucks have always felt that he would prefer to be here, and I think that's right. From what I understand, I do think the Canucks would have an edge. But what do we say about those hometown discount edges? There's a certain barrier to entry.
You got to be in the ballpark.
You've got to be in the ballpark for that to be like a marginal edge that matters for you. Do the Canucks get in the ballpark? Do they feel like the season that he had, the production that he had, represents a new level? Or was it a one-off for a player who had an incredible amount of injury-related opportunity down the stretch, right? They like the player. They like the person. They think he wants to be here. They'd love to keep him. Are they willing to get crazy? And I think that applies across the board, like on the trade market. Are they willing to get crazy? Are they willing to make trades to open up the space to bid on 33-year-old Mikael Granlund? Mm-hmm. A lot of people linking the Canucks to Mikael Granlund. I don't think that's a realistic outcome for the Canucks tomorrow, just based on what I'm hearing. Is there new information on this?
No, but what I wanted to get into that side of things because, you know, you write the piece today at The Athletic, and again, it's building on a lot of what we've been talking about, what we've been hearing about how difficult it is to kind of execute these moves, and, you know, some of what you can just kind of interpret from reading the lay of the land and seeing how teams are valuing picks and players right now. But basically, the idea is that maybe there's going to be a cautious, more long-term approach taken by the Canucks. We've already seen it with the fact that they used their 15th overall pick, didn't move any of the other picks, with the exception of the fourth rounder going out for Evander Kane. And maybe that will continue into free agency, right? Where it's like, you know what? We're not going to go for the big splashy deal. We're going to make some small bets and maintain our cap space, maintain our flexibility going down the road. And I think, you know, it came across a little bit in your piece, but also perusing the comments at The Athletic, where there's a degree of, well, I'll believe it when I see it. And that was my first reaction too. Like, really, the Canucks? They're going to take the cautious, more like long-term approach after they already sold us on how important it was to reimagine their forward group? Like, I have a kind of a tough time wrapping my head around it. But having said that, as much as that, I get that first blush knee-jerk, like, oh, no, what? That's crazy. They're going to do something nuts. Like, they'll be aggressive. Like, point me to the aggressive move that's on the table. Like, where, you know, Mitch Marner's not coming here. Well, Sam Bennett's off the table, right? Like,
there's all sorts of ways that they could still get aggressive, right? They could push their way in on Granlund. They could elbow their way in on Jack Roslovic.
So, okay.
They could meet Pew Suter's asking price. They could trade one of those assets that they feel it would be reckless to move for win now help. They could put those on the table. The point is, you know, the names I just listed, are those significant enough needle movers?
And it's like, so, but it's also a small list, even. Right. You know what I mean? Like, Granlund's really the only one you could even, like, talk yourself into being like, oh, we acquired a top six scoring center.
It's one thing to go 6x4 or whatever for Matt Duchene, who had 80 points last season.
Yeah.
And is, like, a career top line guy. It's a very different thing to go $5 million on Jack Roslovic or 6.5 on Granlund, right? A guy who had a really good playoff run last year, but also who I thought, you know, I'm only like 7 months removed from being like, I'm really happy for Mikael Granlund. He really found his home logging minutes on a non-playoff team.
Yes.
You know, like that's how I was talking about him seven months ago.
Well, I mean, after the Pittsburgh stint and then going to San Jose,
Nashville stint.
A lot of people had just kind of written off Granlund as like a player who's going to help a good team win. And that was maybe unfair.
Yeah.
Dallas liked him, right? Dallas would like to keep him around. But I think it's also perfectly fair to have a lot of skepticism around the idea of like fringe playoff team X signing Granlund to be part of the top six center solution. That would make me very, very nervous if I was running that team. So I guess that's kind of my point, is if they are, like, there's only so many guys out there that they even possibly could get aggressive on. Doesn't mean they won't. And hey, maybe the pressure, as you said, there's structural pressure. There's always a certain amount of pressure to win in this market. If that pressure builds and they ultimately decide they have to do something, I'm not saying it's impossible for them to still go out and remain aggressive, but it does feel like their options, even for taking those kind of desperation stabs, are getting pretty limited in a hurry here. Just an update from around the league, and this doesn't really affect what the Canucks are going to do, but Bob McKenzie saying all signs point to Aaron Ekblad and Florida making progress on a long-term deal that, assuming it's finalized, would take the veteran defenseman out of free agency. And Friedman reports as well, being told Aaron Ekblad is staying in Florida. So they already got Bennett done. Now it looks like they're going to get Aaron Ekblad done. We'll wait and see if they can get Brad Marchand done as well.
Stay tuned for this one. My Ekblad prediction, when did I start saying that one? That the Ekblad number is going to be the one that sends hockey Twitter over the brink in terms of the state tax talking point?
Yep.
Stay tuned. Like, don't leave your feet on X for the next 25 minutes as Ekblad contract details are reported, because I think this one's going to be team friendly to such a level that it causes, you know, a potential like server malfunction or meltdown just from the reactions, the beautiful tears of Canadian hockey fans. I think this is going to be as fun as it gets. This might be the best part of free agency. So stay tuned, stay dialed into our show and onto your X feed for the next 30 minutes.
And somebody texted in, Ekblad off the table now too. Tomorrow might be boring for you guys. And look, we'll always have fun. And it sounds like there could be some contract extension news. Yeah, no, boring. Hey. How dare you?
Sorry, do you have any idea how sick I am? Do you have any idea?
Trance is on the edge of his seat waiting to see where Nick Bjugstad signs.
No. Nick Bjugstad? Wow. Nick Bjugstad?
What? Don't you like him?
I'm talking Matai Blumel.
Okay.
I'm ready to hype up the Matai Blumel sweepstakes. I'm willing to say that whoever wins July 1st will be the team that signs Matai Blumel.
Incredible.
Justin Danforth? Brother. Right-handed. Takes draws. Fast skater. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's 29 and has no pedigree, but that's a guy that can help 30 NHL teams.
There you go. But to the texter's
Robbie
point.
Robbie Fabry.
Oh, man. I loved Robbie Fabry going back to his draft year.
Robbie Fabry,
the big Robbie
still
Fabry guy.
Rip a puck. Robbie Fabry, if I'm telling you, some team strikes out on the big money guys. 1 year, $1.5-2 million flyer on Robbie Fabry. Sign me up.
I was all over Robbie Fabry in 2014 going into the draft. Anyways,
Michael Essamont.
Okay, we get it. But the texter's point, so if Ekblad's off the table, right, Bennett already signed, Tavares signed, Brock Nelson signed, Mitch Marner appears, like, is it a formality at this point, or is it not there, but all signs point towards sign and trade or trade and sign with the Vegas Golden Knights, right?
So the moment that he was reportedly going to wait a couple days,
yeah,
you knew it was just like, Vegas! That's like a flare in Vegas Golden Knights colors.
So we're pretty much down to
Nick Ehlers,
Brad Marchand, assuming it doesn't get done.
Marshy. Yep.
Brock Besser, Vlad Gavrikov. Like, that's your big four. And then it's like Granlund, Patrick Kane, 36 years old. You know, like, that's it. So the guys that, like, I think Ehlers and Besser, I mean, we talked about everything breaking right for Pugh Suter.
Well,
this is like breaking extremely right for Ehlers and Besser.
It's also broken extremely right for offer sheets. And hopefully it's broken right too for some late breaking trade activity. I mean, we saw like some trades earlier today. Tarasenko, yep. Teams are beginning to move things around the board. The Canucks think that things are going to loosen up as some teams try to move some money to make things happen. We saw that happen to begin last night, right? After the Geeky signing, could the Bruins be one of those teams? The New Jersey Devils decided to qualify Cody Glass today because there was too much interest being shown in him. How did they know about that?
Yeah, that was hilarious.
Who was showing interest?
I also love it's like, wait a second, you guys like this guy? Oh, we'll keep him if that's the case.
Also, there's all this like swashbuckling that the NHL really wants to come after somebody for tampering. And it's like, come after everybody then.
Yeah, like, indeed.
I'm sorry, but clearly the system needs a complete overhaul, and it's not going to be accomplished by arbitrarily punishing one team for something you didn't like.
There was also the report.
Although I'm biased against the NHL arbitrarily punishing one team for something everybody did, given that, you know, I cover the Vancouver Canucks.
There's also, there was the report, I think it was from Pierre LeBrun in The Athletic today, that the NHL said you're not even allowed to, like, give your pending UFA permission to talk to other teams before July 1st now. They warned the clubs about that, which I thought was kind of odd. It's like, if they're giving permission, then what's the big deal? I don't know. If they just like want to hold up all the deals until it actually breaks at July 1st for like content perspective. But there's always talk about like, oh, they're really going to crack down on tampering. And then it's 9:01 tomorrow and there's like 6-year deals being signed. So that's pretty much how I would expect it to go tomorrow morning when the market opens as well.
The state, by the way, of the Vegas Golden Knights blue line in the wake of the Pietrangelo news. You just know Erik Karlsson, Vegas Golden Knights deadline acquisition.
Well, apparently they took a run at Rasmus Anderson.
Right.
And Rasmus Anderson...
That was L.A.
L.A. L.A. took a run at Rasmus Anderson, but Rasmus Anderson apparently only wants to go to Vegas.
And there's a Canucks link in there, right? In that now that Rasmus Anderson, like, whether you have no trade protection or not, once you have the ability to sign an extension, it is a three-dimensional deal. The player has a seat at the table, and that obviously has implications for us in terms of how we think about the Quinn Hughes thing. I still think when you're talking about a player of Hughes's caliber, right, the ability to trade him with the extension in hand is worth more than the control or ability to, like, you know, more freely manufacture an open bidding process than not. But nonetheless, just wanted to bring that up as an instructive example of like a real-time issue that we've kind of been talking through across the last couple months.
So there's a little bit of an update about what's going on around the league. Again, reports that Aaron Ekblad is going to remain in Florida, and we don't know the numbers, the term, anything like that yet. We'll relay those when it happens.
But have you already seen the Bob McKenzie follow-up tweet?
Yes.
Oh, buddy, I'm telling you, mate, you will remember where you were when hockey Twitter melted down about the Ekblad AAV. I promise you, this is going to be so good.
And we'll see. We'll see when it comes down here, when we get official news. We'll keep monitoring the Mitch Marner situation.
We're right at the finish line of one of my most obtuse predictions of the offseason. And I'm so excited.
By the way, the one thing I'll say about the draft is I was really disappointed because I called like 2 months ago with Books. I was like,
Victor Eklund.
I was like, here's what's going to happen. He's being ranked top 7 now, and then all the big guys are going to rise up, and then he's going to go to the Canucks at 15. And he made it to 15. They just didn't take him. But I was on the edge of my seat. I was like, come on, Eklund.
Yeah. I've got a lot of draft thoughts.
We'll talk more about the draft.
Really quickly, though, I've got a lot of thoughts about the draft. And I think they left some meat on the bone not taking Victor Eklund, which we can get into. Mm-hmm. But overall, I thought the Canucks had one of the best, certainly the best draft performance as a class. Not necessarily in terms of outcomes and what we'll expect down the line, because there's some draft picks the Canucks have made that are aging really well. But in terms of the quality and angles on the bets across the board, especially relative to the rest of the league, really taking some bizarre shots on just like big bodied project players who like aren't even functional hockey contributors in their own junior leagues. Like the Canucks did none of that. And that alone probably puts them in the top like 33% of teams in terms of their class. They really focused on functional players. So tip of the cap to the Canucks amateur staff. I really liked what they did over the weekend.
We will go to break on this. Elliot Friedman, Ekblad, 8 years, $6.1 million AAV.
Oh, there it is.
So there it is.
Oh, there it is.
Let that percolate, and we'll take a break.
$6.1 million.
Ian McIntyre joins us on the other side here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.
Any idea how sick I am? Do you have any idea?
Do you know how easy this is for me? Do you have any idea how easy this is? This is a joke, and I'm sorry you can't do this. I really am.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. Coverage of NHL Free Agency 2025 is brought to you by Homes by David L. Young of Dexter Realty. Here, there, everywhere. Visit Homes by David L. Young.com. And of course, we will have all day coverage of NHL Free Agency here on the station tomorrow. Halford and Brough in their normal spot, 6 to 9. We'll take over early edition, 3-hour edition, 9 till noon. I know Dimitri is going to join us to help break down some signings, which is always exciting. We'll do our best to talk to anyone that the Canucks either sign new, extend from the organization. Maybe we get an interview with a departing player if we're lucky as well. So we'll do our best to fill up those 3 hours. And of course, there should be lots and lots to react to. Guests on Sportsnet 650, call in on the hotline powered by Power West Industries. Don't get caught in the dark when it matters most. Visit them at powerwest.ca today. They keep the lights on. Okay, IMAC's going to join us momentarily here, but we do not yet have him on the line. So we'll get IMAC here in a second. I should mention, we didn't have a chance to talk about it in the first segment because there's just a lot going on, but the Canucks did announce 4 deals for RFAs and Abbey players today. So Max Sasson, Arshdeep Bains, Atu Ratu, and Guillaume Brisebois, who remains in the organization. The Guillaume Brisebois era continues for the Vancouver Canucks, but they all signed new deals. I'll run through the details quickly here. Max Sasson, 1-year deal, 1-year one-way deal. Arshdeep Bains signs a 2-year deal. The first year is two-way. The second is a one-way. And Atu Ratu signs a 2-year one-way deal. Guillaume Brisebois was a 1-year deal, I believe. So lots of signings there from guys who were key parts of what the Abbotsford Canucks did. And Atu Ratu, we certainly expect to play a large role at the NHL level next season for them. Also extended qualifying offers to Jet Wu and Nikita Tolopilo. They did not qualify Tristan Nielsen, Cole McWard, Christian Felton, or Ty Glover. And I do think it's interesting. We're seeing kind of, from like 2 to 3 years ago, the crop of either NCAA or CHL free agents and the divergent paths here, right? Because Sasson, Bains, Nielsen, McWard, Felton all fall into that category, right? 2 of them re-up and stay with the organization. They've kind of hit that those development benchmarks. The other ones, all right, they didn't work out, so they're leaving, and we'll see if we get a new batch of players like that at some point here.
Yeah, the... Yeah, look, I mean, I like taking care of the deals for these gentlemen who did so well, obviously, for the team down in Abbotsford really fast, right? Like, I like them being locked in. I think it's a little interesting that Sasson only went for one. You know, he gets the 1-year deal, but they've really tried to do the two for most of these guys. You know, Sasson was arbitration eligible. And so I wonder if they deviated from their usual path because, look, at the end of the day, he did play 29 NHL games, right? 10 minutes plus. Like, that's enough with his playoff run to have been an annoyance in late July, early August. So I think there's a lot of – we'll get into this a little more, I think, because there's a lot of language in those contracts.
But right now, joining us on the hotline, powered by Power West Industries, he's brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. He is our pal from Sportsnet, Ian McIntyre. Hi, Mac. Thanks for doing this. How are you?
I'm doing well. When I come on these shows in the middle of the day, especially on a day like this right before free agency, one of my biggest fears is that I'm going to miss a signing in the minutes before I come on and start talking like an idiot. But then I realize, well, I kind of am an idiot at times, so there's no defense against that. But I also thought, no matter how prepared I am, I know Drance is going to ask me a question out of left field. There's going to be
That's true.
I'll be something I'm so I can't possibly be fully prepared. So let's go.
Okay. Well, let's start with the off-speed stuff. Let's start with the off-speed stuff. Here's a new formulation for you, Mac. We know about cap crunches. We've seen teams in cash crunches. What do you think about the current NHL as being in a talent crunch in which there's too much cap space and not enough good players to go around?
Yeah, too many teams. We need contraction. That's the solution. I don't think the owners are going to go for it, though.
Nope.
It's been such an interesting few years, has it not, for this league and its economic climate, because this inflation, this absolute torrent of cash pouring into the marketplace, has all the bad teams thinking, well, we got all this money. Hey, we can add players now. We can be good. We can be a playoff team. I mean, the NHL, there is such parity that almost everybody's trying to make the playoffs. And I'm not going to include Chicago and San Jose, but and who knows, you know, which direction a team like the Islanders, or maybe is Pittsburgh going to do more of a retool than what they've shown so far. But for the most part, teams actually think they can be a playoff team if they just spend their money wisely and add the right players. So you have all these teams with money, all of them trying to add players. Well, if everyone's trying to add players and no one's subtracting them, where are you going to get these said players? So it is a very strange, it's a nice problem to have. This is a far better problem than those multiple years of cap suppression, where everybody, was playing Twister to build a lineup and stay under the salary cap. So it's a nice problem to have, but it's an untimely problem, as was the pandemic and how that clobbered the Canucks and what they had planned to do, or maybe had planned to do. It comes at an untimely time for Vancouver, when they are motivated buyers. They're willing to give up assets. We don't know which ones, but they're willing to make trades that, as Jim Rutherford told us at the end of the regular season, would be expensive, but they would be expensive not to make as well, which I thought was a good way of putting it, considering the window this team is in with Quinn Hughes. And it's just so hard to find a taker. Like, I don't think draft picks were ever of less value, especially once you got out of the top 10. And some of those were available and nobody moved on them. But I don't think draft picks were ever as devalued as they were in this draft. And, you know, maybe in the end that's going to be a good thing. You know, just as it was a good thing that their delay on Nikita Zadorov led to him actually signing somewhere else, so they're now not stuck with that contract. Maybe this is going to be a good thing. Maybe Braden Coutts, maybe Medvedev, maybe Durbin, whose name Thomas can't say.
I can't say. Why can't I say it?
Durbin? You can't say Durbin?
No, I you know what? I like learned it wrong. You know, like, I have this problem where if I learn something wrong, I'm so glad you called me out on this, Mac. All day long, and on like the Zoom with him and in the question to Todd Harvey, like every scrum I was in, I was like, and your third round pick, Kieran. Because I couldn't say his last name. It's a complete mystery. Thank you, Mac. I'm glad you called me out on that. It's so weird.
Well, you know what I find before I get back to my answer? What I find is, so he's got a really interesting name. It's not common, right? Mm-hmm. Durbin for a last name. And there are some Kierans, especially if you're a soccer guy like me and you know a lot of Irishmen. Kierans around.
My best friend's name, Kieran. He's probably listening.
It's one of those names, you see it quickly, you might think of it, his name is Durbin Kieran.
Sure.
Kieran Durbin.
Yeah, sure.
Or it's Kieran, you know, something else. So I don't blame you, but I had to call you out because you actually asked me during the press conference with Todd Harvey, Ian, what's that guy's name again? Durbin. Oh, yeah, Durbin. And then you had a really good question about Durbin, but you couldn't think of his name.
No.
Anyway, so back to my answer. Maybe it's going to be a good thing that the Canucks couldn't pull off a trade, because maybe Coutts is going to be another Bo Horvat who comes in and you think there's a certain ceiling. And even if he meets that ceiling and becomes a second-line player, that's fantastic. But maybe he actually blows through the ceiling like Bo did. And he seems like the kind of kid who might do that. Maybe 4 years from now, we'll be thinking about how lucky the Canucks were that they didn't trade that pick. But it certainly was, a failed weekend from the point of the trade mission that they've been on for 2 months. And, you know, they're trying again today. I think they're in a lot of things. But it's just so hard to get good players. I mean, you can get players, but to get good players, because every team is now kind of predisposed with all this cap money to keep their good players and try to make themselves better. So it's an interesting time, but it's the climate certainly isn't helping the Canucks in what they're trying to do.
If the Canucks end up going into tomorrow and signing some value contracts short term, let's say they add Radek Faksa, like a big depth center, and let's say they add Tanner Jeannot, you know, another third line winger, but a gritty player. We know what the role will be. And otherwise, they've at least kept Lekkerimäki, and they've made their first round pick, and they've kept their 2026 first round pick, and on. Do you think the market will have a tough time with that, or do you think the market kind of understands that in the wake of the JT Miller trade, this was a team that had sort of reached a new phase of its team building cycle?
Well, I think it's, you know, a pretty smart market. It can be crazy sometimes, but mm-hmm. it is pretty smart. I think it understands hockey. I think they'll understand the dynamics and the headwinds economically that the Canucks are fighting on this. But if they don't get another player for their top six, and we're presuming that, you know, Besser is leaving and Suter is leaving, and who knows, maybe Suter is going to be the guy they miss more than Brock Besser for his versatility and all the things he could do for them, including being the first guy out on every penalty kill for a unit that was very good. If the Canucks don't add more to it, then they're not delivering on their promise to upgrade the top six, even though we've just talked about all the factors going against them in doing so. And I think there's going to be some disappointment, because you need star quality players. And it doesn't mean it was, you know, Sam Bennett or bust, but you need guys who can win you games at the top of the lineup. And, you know, when Miller was traded and Besser was much less effective without Miller as his center, but the bottom line is now you've got two-thirds of what was a really dangerous, high-caliber NHL line that's not here anymore, and you've got Evander Kane back instead, and that's not enough. That's not a full replacement. That's not replacement value.
Do you think that if they, and again, I know we're kind of like asking you for future takes about what might happen tomorrow, but I'll just limit to the fact that they did keep their first round pick. They made a selection instead of trading it for center help. And I wonder how much maybe that speaks to internal confidence in an Elias Pettersson bounce back. Because, yeah, even if Elias Pettersson bounces back, you would still love to have those other impact forwards, to be able to add those impact forwards in the top six around him. But I can also understand if you think you're getting a version of Elias Pettersson that's much closer to the old Pettersson next year, I can see how that would maybe reduce the urgency to go out and add those star players a little bit. Do you think there's something to that, that maybe the club is kind of quietly confident that we're going to see a very different Elias Pettersson next season?
Well, they're going to have to, right? Because they're all in on this.
Yeah.
Like that's, you know, once they make the decision that they're going to try and work with them and impress upon them to have a better summer and come back better. And they don't have any choice now but to believe in them and support them, unless there's a deal coming today. And I don't think there is.
No.
But I'll also say, from talking to, and Thomas is probably the same way because he talks to people in the organization, there is a lot of confidence that Pettersson is going to be much better next year. And I don't know if that's partly like he couldn't possibly be that poor again. So, you know, even if he's 65 points, he's much better than he was last season. But they internally, they do have a lot of belief that Pettersson can be better. Can he be 102-point Pettersson? I mean, that's a huge reach, I think, based on what we've seen the last season and a half since he signed his extension. But they do have confidence that he's going to be better. But the other thing that they say they're confident in, but of course, medical science being what it is, I don't know how fully confident you can be. They, you know, Philip Chytil is kind of a forgotten player right now in this organization. Like it's easy when you're looking at the Canucks on paper, you know, they don't have a second line center. Who's going to be? Well, they think Philip Chytil is the second line center, and they're confident that he's going to come back healthy. The question, of course, is always going to loom over him. How long will he be healthy for when you've had that number of serious head injuries at such a relatively young age? Can you expect a full season out of them? Can you expect them not to get hurt again? And listen, we'd all love, you know, I don't care what kind of player Philip Hedl is, no one that young should have to go through what he's been through as far as quality of life questions beyond just being a hockey player because of the injuries that he's had. So I hope he's healthy. But I think that it's a dual bet by the Canucks. And it doesn't mean they're not still trying to add a center. But in their position, they're confident that their fallback, if nothing else, is that they have the first two centers of Elias Pettersson and Philip Hedl for next season. And then they'll fill in around that. So I think there's confidence in that. But I don't think it's necessarily being weighing or changing what they're trying to do. Like, they are trying to add a center, and they weren't able to do one with their draft pick. They're trying to do one now without the draft pick. I mean, because even if it's just Suter is going, that's still a big, big hole for them. You know, you don't have to. I mean, Ratu should be on the team next year, but strictly, you know, low ceiling at this point, strictly fourth line and checking and hopefully kill some penalties. You need another option. And even, you know, even if you weren't worried about Pettersson and Hedl for the various reasons that people are worried about them, you would still want a better third line center than what they have right now on paper, because you know that injuries happen and that you may have to elevate people. And we saw at the end of last year, even though I thought Suter did an incredible job filling in as essentially a top line center, but you know, it was exposed when Miller was traded and Pettersson was a hologram, and then he got hurt, and then Hedl got hurt, and then you look at how they're trying to fill in. I mean, you just couldn't do it. And so I think they need some better fallback options this season, even if they start the year with a motivated and well-primed and conditioned Pettersson and a healthy Hedl. You need better options than what they have right now, just in case something happens to one of them.
Mac, we have a rule on this program at this time of year where we don't get pre-mad, okay? But that, which is that we don't want to indulge in the
a frequently broken rule.
It's a beloved Vancouver pastime of getting pre-mad about a Canucks rumor as if it's already occurred. Right? That's the rule. I actually think we're pretty good about following it.
We're not bad.
I think I'm better than you. Anyway, I'm going to break that rule though.
Okay.
And I'm going to pitch you on a hypothetical scenario.
Okay.
In the event that Brock,
I thought I already handled your off-speed stuff.
Well,
this is the EFIS now. Yeah, it's the really off-speed stuff.
My shoulder's okay. Sore, man. I don't have my fastball.
Okay. All right,
we're going pure Todd Helton. In the event that Brock Besser, as is rumored, ends up signing with the Edmonton Oilers, will you view the Evander Kane trade any differently?
No, I personally will not, because you know that Brock Besser isn't signing with the Edmonton Oilers or anybody else for 1 year or 2 years or 3 years. And the Canucks have a 1 year commitment to Kane. And I'm not sure that, you know, it would really make a difference to Vancouver if they knew that he was going to go to Edmonton or even Winnipeg, which is still a Western Canadian team. I don't know that it would change their thinking about what Besser's value is to them on a long-term deal. I just don't think they love the player enough to pay the market value for Brock Besser. So if you've made that decision, then you can't be too concerned about where he ends up, right? He's going to play for somebody against the Canucks at some point. Yeah, it'd be better. It'd be nicer for everyone, I think, including Brock, if it wasn't Edmonton. But if it is, I don't think it changes the way they think about Evander Kane and their roster construction as they project for years ahead.
IMAC, I don't think you missed a signing or anything while you were on air with us. So a success from
that
perspective.
Did you see the Ekblad one before you came on? That was the one that broke right before.
Yeah. I mean, Florida. I mean, that's what happens when you win. When you win and people want to play there and you have no state tax.
Yeah.
I don't know how you ever left that paradise, Thomas.
Yeah. What's the deal? You left sunny Florida, no pressure.
Well, I wasn't making millions of dollars, and the idea that there was no pressure is not true.
That's fair.
I have far more flexibility doing what I do, and I'm much better at it than I was doing that.
And that's MAGA. That's MAGA Ground Zero, too.
Oh, so. That's not a problem for me. I'm kidding.
All right.
I work in hockey. What do you mean?
All right. We appreciate the time as always, man. And I'm sure enjoy a busy July 1st. And hopefully we can talk again soon.
Yeah, you guys too. Have a good week.
That is Ian McIntyre, our colleague at Sportsnet. Brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com.
I was not ready for Mac.
I was definitely not ready for that.
Mac ends up throwing the off-speed stuff, and he completely baited me.
Yeah, we were like, whoa!
I like swung way outside the zone. I'm like, I don't care.
Swung way outside the zone. A wild swing.
Yeah, like looking like someone who R.A. Dickey just struck out, where it's like, how?
What was going on with that pitch? Oh, man.
A devious sinker for my Mac to close the interview.
R.A. Dickey. So sick.
R.A. Dickey. Well, Mets R.A. Dickey.
Yeah, Mets
so
R.A. Dickey, of course. Yeah, it was absolutely
incredible. Blue Jays R.A. Dickey was so frustrating.
Yeah. Gets a break.
Extremely frustrating. Gets a break. All right. It's his name. I'm not allowed to say R.A. Dickey on the air now. It's his name.
He's a Buffalo Sabre.
Right, well,
let's go break quickly.
The Mets promoted Dickie Lovelady.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah.
Dickie Lovelady.
His name is Richard, and he decided to go, knowing his last name was Lovelady, he decided, you know what? I'm not going Rick or Ricky. I'm going Dickie. Dickie Lovelady. That's how I'm rolling through life. Good for him. I mean,
it's a memorable name.
It's a very memorable name. An extremely, extremely memorable name. Lena and Arash are absolutely furious with us
for
continuing
go to
down
break.
This road. So I'll just mention that coverage of NHL Free Agency 2025 is brought to you by Homes by David L. Young of Dexter Realty. Here, there, everywhere. Visit homesbydavidlyoung.com. We got a lot more to get into. We just touched on the Ratu, Bane, Sasson, Brisebois signings, the qualifying offers and non-qualifying offers. Decisions by the Canucks. We can get into that. Haven't even really touched on the draft class, so we can talk about that and lots more about their potential approach in free agency to get into as well. Send your text in 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. We got another hour of Canucks talk here on Sportsnet 650.
Here's a number.
It's Elliot Friedman, Ekblad, 8 years, $6.1 million AAV.
Oh,
for
there it is.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. A lot to get into here, but first, of course, I want to remind everyone about the Sportsnet 650 Jays Care 50-50, which is live right now. You've got 1 week left to get your tickets, so don't wait. Go do it now. You could win half the jackpot. The other half supports Challenger Baseball, a program that helps kids of all abilities across BC thrive through sport. Tickets start at just $10 with bundles for even more chances to win. Don't wait. Get your tickets now at jayscaregolf.rafflenexus.com, or you can text money to 650-650 now to get the link sent directly to you. The Jays Care tournament itself is a week today, so we're expecting a big bump in the 50-50 jackpot at the actual golf tournament, and then Halford and Brough will announce the winner on their show on July 8th. So we're getting down to the wire here. Again, don't put it off. Don't do what I would do and procrastinate and then last minute have to do it. Take care of it now. Be proactive. Go to jayscaregolf.rafflenexus.com to get your tickets. Again, you could win half the jackpot. The other half goes to a fantastic cause, which is Challenger Baseball. All right. And by the way, again, coverage of NHL Free Agency 2025 is brought to you by Homes by David L. Young of Dexter Realty. Here, there, everywhere. Visit homesbydavidlyoung.com. I mentioned just quickly before we started talking to our pal Ian McIntyre in the last segment, the Canucks do four deals for their own players today, all of kind of varying lengths and structures, but Max Sasson, Arshdeep Bains, Atu Ratu, and Guillaume Brisebois all remain with the club. And Drance, being you, I know you've got thoughts about all these deals as well.
Which deals specifically?
Sasson, Bains, Ratu.
Yeah, okay, so there's some signal in these contracts and then their overall structure. Bains getting the two-year deal, but it's the two-way deal for the first year.
Yeah.
And then the second, that's very much in line with how the Canucks have preferred to handle their business. I'm actually surprised that the first year is a two-way. Yeah. And I wonder what that says in terms of like the waiver exemption thing versus not, because for most of these guys, this like class of guy, the Linus Karlsson and company group, like Max Sasson will be waiver exempt next year. Bains will not.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder for Sasson, right, getting the one-year deal getting the one-way deal matters more than it does for Bains, right? Bains in some ways is like easier to claim, I guess, because he doesn't have the one-way NHL salary.
Until the second season of the deal,
which should be enough to dissuade teams if that's in fact the way it goes. So that's sort of just like an interesting wrinkle, just like little language within it that I think should give us pause or make us consider it slightly. Atu Ratu obviously is waiver exempt, so it doesn't matter. He gets the classic Jack Rathbone quality, like the Akito Hirose league min salary, 2 years one way. And then Sasson gets the one. So there's just slight differences between the three. I don't think they give us like a lot of data points, but clearly Ratu with the 2 years one way, you know, that does like who's the most likely of these three to break camp with the team. We knew it was Ratu anyway, but yep. The contract does really sort of emphasize that or reinforce that in a way that, you know, Bains and Sasson are in slightly different mm-hmm. shoes. Now, I do want to quickly come back to the Ekblad deal.
Of course, yeah.
Now we'll watch for Brad Marchand, right? And if the Florida Panthers are able to pull off keeping the entire band together, or, you know, do they sign Mackie Samuskevich to a slightly longer term deal and sort of move on from there? In a world where Marchand signs, especially given where his market price has gotten to, people reporting some pretty wild numbers with Utah and the Toronto Maple Leafs to be expected to be among the bidders based on reporting. If they find a way to keep Marchand, I think we then start to look at how the Panthers can make that work. And Evan Rodriguez is an interesting name. Obviously a Pittsburgh Penguins mm-hmm. player, a guy that the Penguins traded for out of Buffalo and then re-signed after trading him to the Toronto Maple Leafs, that weird Kapanen deal that we talked about a couple weeks ago. So this is a player who Jim Rutherford has had in his organizations, who we know him to be a fan of. I think he's more a winger than a center, but he can play both wing and center. He is right-handed. He's also really good, right? Probably not a top-line caliber player, but I think if you were to say he could be a one-for-one replacement for Pugh Suter, and that's a pretty rare profile, I would say, yeah, you're right. That's a lot of similarities there, right? Yeah, except he has probably more attacking juice, and Pugh Suter is a little bit more special defensively. So that's just a name that I think we should keep in mind coming out of that. I do want to note, I do believe that the opportunity cost, like, there's a huge opportunity cost of bridging, especially Ratu. Right, mm-hmm. Ratu's really the guy who we expect to play NHL minutes next season. The Canucks need to sort of find out what they have there. If he comes in and he's good, like a credible middle six guy, right? What do you really get for a team in Vancouver's state, especially if they don't land a big upgrade, right? Mm-hmm. If they don't land the sort of big upgrade that gives them a chance to be a win now posture team going into next season, what's the benefit of having Ratu at 7.75k or 775k if he hits over the next two seasons versus trying to get a 4 or 5 year deal done at $2 million or $2.5 million, right? The cap space doesn't matter that much for Vancouver today. And the upside, if he is, you know, if he does end up being like a 40, 45 point guy who can credibly handle middle 6 minutes, there's no real way to capture that, because if he hits now, you're looking at paying him four and a half in 2 years in a $115 million cap environment. So there is a really significant opportunity cost on Ratu specifically as a result of the Canucks doing a 2 year deal here. And I do want to shout that out, because I do think that bridges generally are like really bad bets this summer across the board. I'm shouting out every other example on Twitter. So I felt it important to at least do a quick bit on that.
I will note, good to get the Ratu deal done early.
Yes.
Because you had also flagged that as like a potential sneaky offer sheet.
100%.
Situation for the Canucks to have to deal with.
One of the best in the league. Like, I looked through trying to find some players that would have made sense for the Canucks to do the league min. You can go up to 1.4 without surrendering any compensation. You just annoy and tie up a team's cap space. And I actually think it's a pretty good route to take, especially if you're talking about centermen, right? Talking about premium position players. I think it's an interesting way to bring some talent in your organization, especially if you do it 1 year, right? Where it's like, oh man, like we're going to be dealing with an annoying qualifying offer for year after year, right? Like, I think there's some interesting ways to play those types of scenarios. So yeah, obviously good to be able to do your own deal and have that cost certainty and not worry about it at all before July 1 even hits. So that is good work.
Yeah, and we'll see. There. You know, there's your, as you said, like anytime you have a promising young player, and you know he's not the shine has come off a little bit, but we are also very impressed of what he did down the stretch, right? So there's some legitimate optimism and upside there with Atu Ratu, and you'll see. We'll see how much he demands on his next contract. All right, let's talk draft. We haven't had a chance to really dive into the draft class. I mentioned Braden Coutts off the top, and they made six selections. Coots in the first round, of course, the center from the Seattle Thunderbirds. Medvedev, goalie from the London Knights. Kieran Dervin, center out of the Ontario High School system, who also played some WHL or some OHL games this year. Wilson Bjork out of Sweden. Gabe Sherratt from the OHL. And Matthew Lansing from the USHL. And I'm certainly not the first person to say this, but before we start to dive into like any of the individual players and their profiles and all of that, to me, far and away, the most notable thing about this draft class, in addition to the fact that we all expected them to trade 15 and then they got up there and made the Braden Coutts pick, far and away, the most significant notable thing about the draft class is the first time they've picked in rounds 1, 2, and 3 since 2018, when they took Quinn Hughes, Jet Wu, and Tyler Madden in those rounds. That's a long time to go. Without not, we're not talking a surplus in the first three rounds. We're talking just making your allotted picks in rounds 1, 2, and 3. The last time before the weekend was 2018. I think that's just like really, really significant that it actually transpired. And I would not have bet this to be the year. I would very much have bet even a month ago on the streak of missing at least one, either your first or second round pick, or sometimes both. I would have bet on that continuing, and I'm surprised to not entirely disappointed that it did not continue, that they snapped that streak this weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's good. I thought this was a good, so again, there was a lot of teams that went in and really learned the wrong lessons, in my opinion, about the Florida Panthers winning the Stanley Cup and just doubled down on, again, players that in their own junior leagues were not functional hockey players. Mm-hmm. You know, all of a sudden, I understand why all the industry buzz was like, this is a weak draft class. It's like, well, based on the players you guys were watching. And the fact that the Canucks went in and truly did avoided that, right? So, 15th overall, they take Coots. You know, I didn't do as much draft work as I generally do. No. But
no one in this market did.
No one in this market did. And thank goodness. But from what I understand and talking to a variety of evaluators and just how I prefer to look at it, like Victor Eklund is the higher upside pick. And so, you know, I do think it's fair to say that there's maybe some meat left on the bone value-wise. That said, Coots is a really nice prospect. Like, it's not a reach, right? You can quibble over value, but fundamentally we're talking about a like flavor preference as opposed to, you know, something more significant than that, something that I'd really be like, oh man. Now, that said, you know, I was saying similar things about like Vertanen over Ehlers and Nylander. I was like, oh, you know, it's not like a reach. It's just that I thought those guys were bigger bets.
That was a bad take. Bad take by you.
Well, I just thought those guys were better bets. It wasn't a reach.
No, I mean, yeah, okay, yeah.
I think it was bad take by the Canucks.
It was.
Okay, now, so I don't want to like minimize this either, that I think there were better bets on the board, but it's a good value pick at 15. The profile is really interesting, and man, does he seem like a great kid. Just seems like an awesome guy. Talking to a bunch of Thunderbird staffers and coaches and on, just a preternaturally competitive kid. They made him captain at a very young age. He was the youngest captain in the dub. He was still a point per game guy and the leading scorer for like an overmanned team that was going through a rebuild after loading up for the Memorial Cup. Stories about how, you know, the Korchinski Gunther class, like when they were making teams and stuff, because he was practicing with those guys. He didn't get into games. Everyone would pick him really early because he'd go into the games and just be like grinding away and going a million miles per hour. So none of the vets wanted him to be against them because they'd have to like work a little harder.
Annoying, yeah.
So annoying. So I love hearing stuff like that. Coach told me like he gets into the office and there's one of those shooting tarps, you know? And he gets in the office like 6 a.m. every day. And by 6:30, he'll know that Braden's arrived because he starts to hear the pucks mashing it. So he's one of those guys, just like absolute rink rat. I love to hear that.
Well, and he had one of the all time. And I don't think he was like consciously using a cliche in any ways. But like one of the all time great lines that you love to hear from professional athletes you're hoping to root for, which is like, I hate losing more than I like winning.
Totally.
It's like, yes, that's right.
Yeah. I hear he's even like that, like on the pickleball courts, you know, on and on. So you can go read my athletic piece about the 2-on-2 drill when he was recovering from a hip flexor, where he was like smashing the assistant coaches around because he didn't want them to celebrate. So yeah, I mean, look, you need to beat the odds to be to pay off as a 15th overall pick. You know, like you need to beat the odds. And if you have the sort of personality where you at least feel comfortable betting on a guy that he's going to absolutely empty the tank to reach his potential, you know, that's something to bet on. And at 15th overall, you're not betting on a sure thing. You're playing an angle. And if the angle you're playing is this guy is the character to max out what he is, and we're very confident that he's going to be an organizational fixture who's a right-handed centerman, you know, fair enough. There are some East-West playmaking limitations in his game that some in the industry, some talent evaluators spotlighted, who I spoke with. Good wheels, not high end. You know, I saw some like Twitter stuff and then was debating with some Canucks fans in online spaces who would say stuff like, he's a zone entry machine. It's like, do you watch CHL hockey? Because every first round pick is a zone entry machine. Yeah. That's like a bar. So, but I think he's a good skater, like a strong skating center. I did talk to some evaluators who thought size was going to be a limiting factor for him, right? He's not a like big bodied center pivot. He's right-handed. He's a speed based player more than he's a big player. And, you know, while we've seen that player type work, we don't see it that much. And the guys that do work, you know, your Nick Suzuki's or your Braden Points, those guys are like 98 points in 65 games in their draft plus 1 year. His scoring profile is a little more like Anton Lundell, Bo Horvat, although Bo Horvat was bigger. There's some shades of that. You know, Bo Horvat didn't have the East-West playmaking game either.
Bo Horvat, and I remember, this is a bad take by me at the time as a fan, I remember being choked. I look like,
well, Bo Horvat has the ultimate bust-sounding name.
Well, and also, and what's the ultimate litmus test for, like, first-round pick, right, in the CHL, point per game? So you're a fan, and it's like, oh, we just drafted this guy. We didn't expect to be picking here. They traded Corey Schneider. They just drafted this guy, Hockey DB. And it's like, under a point per game. And you're immediately really worried. But as you said, like a part of the Bo Horvat story is the work ethic and the character and the type of person he is. And while the physical profile is different, because Bo Horvat's solid as anything, right? Even if he's
but
not
Bo
tall.
Was bigger.
Yeah, he's just a really solid dude.
Bo wasn't the skater that Kutz is at the same age. Now, that said, by the time Bo Horvat made it to the NHL just 18 months later, he'd changed up his skating stride and added a ton of core strength and was immediately like lethal off the rush on entering the NHL full time at 19. Kutz could be that as a skater, especially if he improves across the next, like he's not probably going to play NHL games this year. But next year, right? Like he could add to that. I don't think that's outside the realm of possibility. Staying in Seattle this for next season, will be the captain again down there. And, you know, that's a smart organization. Next 18 months, like maybe not this year, but the year after, they're probably going to be loaded. So yep. It'll be fun to watch his progress. They take a goaltender in round two. Now, Ian Clark.
Oh, sorry. Just the one last note yep. I want to make on the selection of Coots, because we talked about sure. just the streak of picking in the first two rounds and picking in the first three rounds. They also hadn't selected a center higher than the third round since Elias Pettersson in 2017. And I'm not advocating for going away from best player available. Like, I think that's always right, but it's also just kind of a shocking streak when you consider yeah. how frequently teams draft centers. To have gone that long without using even a second round pick on a center is pretty shocking.
I mean, they haven't made a second round yeah. pick since Hoglander.
So that's the other notable thing. It's been a long time since a center prospect of this legitimate pedigree was in the Canucks system.
Yeah. Yeah. And they needed it. So yeah, I don't look, you can quibble if you want, but the global fact is that the Canucks throughout their draft class mind, like their first round pick was absolutely good value. You know, not a landmine profile, maybe a little high ceiling, low floor, maybe a little safer than you'd like, given how desperate this team is for like real difference makers, more than they are for a centerman down yeah. the line. But again, for me, that's flavor preference. I'm not going to blast a team, especially a scouting staff that's, you know, delivered some pretty interesting hits across the last few years. I'm not going to blast them for a flavor over a flavor preference, even if I do think it's fair to say that Eklund is the higher upside or would have been the higher upside pick, maybe Aitchison too. And then anyway, second round, they take a goalie, Ian Clark, complicated relationship with the organization. But still very involved in the scouting process. I mean,
that's where he was moved to, right? Goalie yeah. scout.
And his goalie scouting title is not an honorific as he picks up a paycheck. He's still deeply involved, was hammering the table for this guy, Alexei Medvedev. Medvedev's been living in North America since he was 14. He speaks pretty good English. He's been like independent of his parents who stay in Russia in St. Petersburg. He goes back in the summers. His parents weren't able to get a visa to attend the draft, which is, you know,
tough,
regrettable, but yep. his sister goes to school there, so she was able to be there to represent the family and celebrate with her brother. So very cool. Seems to be a lovely kid. Just another one of those kids who, talking to people around the London Knights, just seems like one of those never has a bad day kids. Like, he wasn't their starting goaltender as they went on that epic playoff run. He was the backup, but a lot of praise for how he conducted himself, carried himself, just like worked hard, practiced, was happy to be there supporting everybody. So clearly a good teammate. He's going to start for that team next year. That's an OHL powerhouse. And look, I like the idea. Like, at the end of the day, Clark, in his current role as goalie scout, having been reduced from the director of goaltending last summer, at some point, you'd assume, given his reputation around the industry, some team's going to come and make him their director of goaltending.
You'd think so.
And so I like the idea that while you've got Ian Clark, who's got a tremendous record scouting goaltenders, including Tarasov, who just went for a fifth-round pick, including Bobrovsky and the Merzlikins, and, you know, Demko wasn't a pick of his, but he worked closely with Demko, and Markstrom's obviously one of his pupils. And
Shelov's in the sixth round. Like, I mean, whatever you think of where his NHL totally. Career is going, like, that's already been a success.
100%. So, you know, I think whenever you can make an Ian Clark approved goalie pick at this point, given the fact that, you know, he's probably got a few years left on his deal, and at any point, we're not going to be shocked if some late July week, it's like, and Ian Clark joins X organization as the director. Like, that's not going to surprise us if that happens this summer. It's not going to happen. Surprise us if it happens last summer. So I like the idea of the team using one of their best organizational weapons whenever possible while they have it. I actually really like that pick. Probably my favorite one, especially given that a lot of evaluators loved that profile. I know it was like talked about as a reach locally. He was going within five picks of where the Canucks picked. I talked to multiple teams.
Also, I feel like
told me that
if people outside of like NHL scouting circles and are so ill equipped to define what a reach is specifically when it comes to goalies.
Well, and at the draft generally,
but like even more so when it comes to goalies. Goalies outside of the first round, you could tell, like, what's a reach? Who knows? They're goalies, and it's such a wild card which teams are going to take them. So, like, yeah, I don't know. You used a second round pick on a goalie. As you say, teams are going to take him within five picks there. But regardless, it's like it's so hard to judge what the actual draft slot or draft value looks like on goalies in particular, I think. So I don't have a problem with it there, especially given, you, as you said, Ian Clark's track record with goalies.
Kieran Durbin, by the way, has an interesting profile. Let's get into it on the other side of the break, though, because I want to take some more time to just like finish up, wrap this draft class thing up with a bow, and then react to some of the news we're seeing and preview free agency a little bit. How about that?
Yeah, I'll just mention it quickly. I don't want to say not confirmed, but Cam Robinson from Elite Prospects is reporting that he's hearing Edmonton is finalizing an extension for Evan Bouchard, 4 years at $10.5 million per. Again, preliminary reports here, so we'll see if that does in fact come to fruition, but potential big payday for Evan Bouchard.
Bouchard is going to see, here's where it's really interesting, is Bouchard's going to out earn Ekblad by what, $4.5 million across the next 4 years. But where he's really, where the rubber's really going to meet the road there,
is his UFA.
Yeah.
He is, he'll turn 26 in October, so that sets him up to be a 29-year-old UFA.
Because that's really where, like, people will look at the Ekblad deal and be like, well, he got the term he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he'd gone to free agency, even if he gets $9 million times 7, right? Let's say. That's, what, 63 total million? But yep, by the time you do 6 times 8, that's still $48 million. That's only $15 million left on the table, right? Like, oh, that's not so bad. State taxes will take care of it. He probably has his house paid for down there, blah, blah, blah. His stuff's there. But the where Ekblad really loses on this is depending on if like in 2 years, 3 years, if he maintains the level of a top four defenseman and then is locked up at $6 million in a world where like X third 3/4 Gavrikov stand in defender is making $10 or $11 million. Like that's where the real opportunity cost from the player's perspective is. That's where Florida has an opportunity to really win on this deal. So the term, in some ways, it's like easy to look at it and be like, oh, well, that's peace of mind. And that's true. And you can't fight happy and you can't fight rich. And Ekblad will certainly be both, right? But in terms of from an earning perspective and a foregone earning perspective, like it's those latter years of the deal actually that are most team friendly on that Ekblad hometown discount deal.
Absolutely. And for Bouchard, I mean, you get the 4-year deal. It takes you right to being an unrestricted free agent. And man, like he's set up to cash in on that. He would have been a UFA before that, or he could have been a UFA before that, but still pretty early to hit UFA.
They're only buying, well, so what? Because he signed a couple weird deals. They're probably buying 2 UFA years.
I think
years
they're buying
there.
2 UFA years.
Yeah, yeah. I think, you know what? They might be buying more. How many? We'll look into it. We'll figure it out.
But anyways, that's the early reports on a potential Evan Bouchard deal with the Edmonton Oilers. We'll wrap up the draft class. I've got some more free agency questions to get into as well, and some interesting questions coming into the Dunbar Lumber text line. Hopefully we'll have time for those as well. So stay tuned. Final segment of Canucks Talk next here on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Strantz. We are broadcasting live from the Kintech studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their 3 locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. And again, just as a reminder, we'll be on at 9 a.m. tomorrow, 9 to noon. So a special 3-hour edition of the show will be coming on right as the clock opens for NHL free agency. So very, very exciting. Make sure you tune in to see everything that happens or doesn't happen, as the case may be, since we've been talking about the potentially cautious approach from the Vancouver Canucks. But before we get back into that, we had started just kind of run through the draft class over the weekend for the Vancouver Canucks. So we talked about Braden Coutts, the first round pick, Alexei Medvedev, the goalie in the second round. And I know you had some thoughts on Kieran Durbin, the center as well.
Yeah. Term. So it was a weird hockey year for a lot of players in Kieran Durbin's position. This is a player who was drafted. He's an Ontario kid, but he was playing in Pittsburgh as part of the hockey program down there and was drafted in the OHL priority selection draft by the Kingston Frontenacs. But his dream, his goal was to go play college hockey. So he went to St. Andrews College in Aurora, Ontario, which is a top-end prep school that has been producing some NHL draft picks. In fact, a lot of them across the last decade. Recently, Dean Letourneau, who was a Boston Bruins pretty early draft pick, and Pridham the year prior. So they're on a nice little run here. And that's a prep school where you go play, and then you go to play college hockey.
Yeah.
Now, midway through this season, circumstances changed because of NIL, because of the changing relationship between the CHL and NCAA hockey, and the knock-on effects of that are significant. So Dervin went, and he was playing for his prep school team, but all of a sudden he was able to play for Kingston, and he was committed to Penn State, so they pushed the commitment out. He's like, I'm going to go play in the OHL next year after I graduate high school, but I still want to play for my team. So on weekends, where he could, without interfering with school, during spring break, he'd go up to Kingston and he'd play fourth line minutes, having like a pretty small role on a veteran Kingston Frontenacs team, and then he'd return and absolutely crush the prep circuit in Ontario. So what sort of emerged in my first blush reaction when I looked through the profile, I'm like, 6 points in 21 yeah. OHL games in the top 70.
It's like, what?
That's a disaster. But when you look at his prep school scoring and compare it with what other players his size have accomplished, it's very high end. Now, you know, it's not the highest level of hockey. There are talent evaluators that question his, like, the consistency of his competitive edge and motor, right? But the athleticism on this guy, the skating ability, he dominated the combine, like absolutely destroyed the combine. And now he's going to Penn State. Penn State athletes always destroy both the NBA and the NFL combine, like, notoriously. So this is like really throwing gasoline on the fire.
He's going to be on like the Micah Parsons plan, is what you're saying?
Yeah. The most famous Penn State combine smasher was Mike Gesicki.
Right.
Right. Who was like, he ran like the fastest 40 time we'd ever seen for a tight end, and on and on. The Canadian tight end who was drafted by the Giants last year also was like the second most athletic tight end. Saquon. Anyway,
and of course, yeah.
So across the board, just like a handful of athletic freaks who go play for the Nittany Lions in central Pennsylvania and then emerge even more freakish in terms of their athletic tools. This guy's a high-end athlete, high-end skater. And the production profile at the prep level is really exciting, even though the stuff in Kingston is super pedestrian. I think when you understand, though, that he wasn't a full-time player,
it makes a lot of sense.
It makes a lot of sense.
It actually reminds me almost of a value. Well, it reminds me of a couple of things, actually. One is because of the nature of this season specifically, like being in the thick of it as the rules changed and everyone was trying to figure out the status quo on the fly, it reminds me a little bit of the COVID seasons, right? Where mm-hmm. some prospects ended up just having wildly differing levels of opportunity to play. Some of them didn't get to play at all, right? And it kind of created this information vacuum. Now, obviously, this is on a much smaller scale, but specifically the thing where he's going from his prep school to the WHL and playing in like a really limited role, it has the vibes of like a European prospect, right? Where it's like,
totally,
you know, he's shuttling between the junior league and the pro league. And it's like, hey, he's sticking in the pro league, but he only plays like 8 minutes a game. And it's like, you really have to parse through the context and the opportunity and the nature of the team and all of that to try to put it together.
Yeah, I think more than anything, it's like, initially I was like, this seems like a low ceiling bet on a guy purely with athletic tools. And then I started crunching the numbers and asking around a little bit more. And the prep level scoring profile is auspicious enough that I think that's a mistaken way of viewing it. I think there were a variety of teams that had him on their lists. There were a variety of teams that had him on their lists. There were a variety of teams that were very interested by both the athletic profile, the traits, the fact that he's viewed as a natural centerman, and the scoring rates at the prep level. There are concerns about the competitiveness and the competitive motor and how consistently it operates. It fires. No one doubts that when this guy's dialed and focused, it's a sight.
By the way, a texter also points out that athletic freak Cam Wake went to Penn State.
Yeah, let's go.
By the way, you know who else might be going to Penn State?
Yeah, Gavin McKenna visited.
The tampering starts now.
I love that he went to Michigan State University, though, instead of Michigan.
I know.
That's sick, man. That's so sick. Anyway,
But anyways, I'm just saying, Kieran Dervin starting to build the relationship now with Gavin McKenna.
Let's go.
Get the foot in the front door.
So, yeah, Dervin's interesting for that reason. He's staying in Kingston. He's going to play a huge role. I talked to their general manager, Corey Cooper, over the weekend. He's going to have a significant role in Kingston. And so we'll track his progress. But I do think that there's more... That was a more interesting bet than
right.
sort of first met the eye. And then the same thing with the last guy that we'll talk about at length, which is the Swedish gentleman they picked, Wilson Bjork, who is a center, has a little bit of size, has a little bit of grease in his game, and plays with his brother on this J20 team. His brother Viggo Bjork is going to be like a top 10 pick next year, or is certainly tracking that way, and outscored his older brother because... Bjork's a re-entry. Now, a re-entry who's still playing G20 is like a very uninteresting profile to me, right? And again, first blush, I'm like, oh man, what are we talking about here? But when you look at his scoring and look at the history of 19-year-old players who've scored at you know, similar clips at the J20 level, you'll get a lot of real NHL names, right? Like he at least produced at a level where... And like maybe it's not a, you know, 30% bet, but who's getting a 30% bet in the
fourth round?
In the fifth
or
round.
Fifth round, yeah.
But like I think it's a 10% bet.
Which is incredible. For
at
the
least
fifth
at
round.
Least from a at least from a scoring
yeah.
history perspective.
Anyways, yeah.
You know, you'll see guys like there's Erik Brännström had a pretty similar goal scoring rate and pretty similar size.
But Brännström's defenseman.
Sorry, not Brännström. What did I say?
You said Erik Brännström.
I didn't mean Erik Brännström.
I don't know who you meant.
Janmark.
There you go.
Matthias Janmark. And then the other one would be Carl Hagelin.
Sure.
So, look, I mean, fifth round, hard to find. But if you're getting a guy with a legitimate scoring profile, even if he is a re-entry player in the fifth round, I'm going to look at that and say, that's a worthwhile slant to be playing at. And then the last two guys, you know, sort of dime a dozen, sixth or seventh round defensive players with high motors, but at least functional hockey players
yeah.
who were like relatively productive in good leagues at 17, 18, like in their draft year over the course of the past year. No Coke machines, none of that Chicago Blackhawks. Like the Chicago Blackhawks drafted the eighth best player on a Seattle Thunderbirds team that wasn't good in the fourth round. Like my apologies to Braden Coutts if he's listening, because I don't mean to besmirch his teammates, but it's like, what are you doing?
It's a great question about the Chicago Blackhawks.
You know,
a lot of times.
And meanwhile, you'll see like Vegas and Dallas just like jumping up the draft order when high pedigree guys like Schmidt fall.
Yeah.
You know, and Chicago's doing stuff like that. And you're just like, this is everything you need to know. Everything you need to know about the NHL standings, you can actually learn in the fourth round of the NHL entry draft.
650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And I wanted to get back into the free agency conversation and specifically the idea of maybe a more cautious, less splashy approach. And by the way, I also just want to confirm, we mentioned Cam Robinson's report of a 4-year, $10.5 million extension for Evan Bouchard. Lots of other insiders coming in and backing Cam up on that one now. So it sounds like he got that scoop. Shout out to Cam.
Yeah, well done.
For picking that up. That's a big one. He also tweeted not long after that it sounded like a team like Vancouver wouldn't be able to match the bidding in Mikhail Granlund if he hits free agency. So
that's matching my reporting.
Yeah. Another kind of data point out there that whether they want to be splashy or not, it might just not be on the table. Right? Like, are we down to like Jack Rossovic now? And that's not splashy.
And I don't think that's on the table. I don't think they're going to be in on that because I think the market's going to price them out on that.
Yeah.
And so it's...
So here, I have a thought exercise I want to run past you. So either by trade or signing, and a player new to the organization, so we're not talking Connor Garland or Thatcher Demko extensions here. What, like, if I had to set the over-under on highest AAV for a newly acquired player for the Canucks in the next 36 hours here, so the rest of today and then, you know, first day of free agency... Like if I said it's will it be higher or lower than 4.5? A 4.5 AAV.
For who?
For us, like, no, a newly acquired player. Like, you know what I mean? Will they trade for a player with an AAV of higher than 4.5, or will they sign a UFA for an AAV of higher than 4.5?
Oh, man.
Are you taking the over or the under on 4.5?
So let me can I answer it in detailed fashion?
Absolutely.
Okay. I think there's a real tension in terms of the win now versus the long view. And my gut is that the short-term goals, the structural incentive and pressure that this organization feels to make the sort of move that will excite this market and appeal to their captain and give them a shot at getting back on track next season. I've covered this team for long enough that I know where to place my money, and I place my money on that. Now, that said, I mean, you could pay a lot for Evan Rodriguez, and he wouldn't.
He's a $3 million.
Yeah. So, and he wouldn't win me this bet.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I do wonder if, as tomorrow unfolds, if there's some bigger money guys that could end up shaking loose, where the fact that they have bigger contracts, a la Evander Kane, makes them. Means that they come attached to a more manageable price. Mm-hmm. And I think that's I still think what the Canucks are hoping to find is that sweet spot, a guy that helps them at a price that they can live with, you know, at a price that doesn't cost them a preposterous commitment for a guy they probably rate as a, you know, fringe second line quality forward. Like, I think that's something they really want to be careful about avoiding. And I don't think they want to trade their 2026 first, Lekaramäki, Volander, DPD. Obviously, and not Braden Coots, but that should be obvious. And so, you know, I think within those parameters, like that, those are the things that I feel comfortable with right now. I think the Canucks are going to be very reluctant to pay a premium either in free agency or in draft capital to bring in one of those middle six-y type centers. I think it's going to have to be someone who really moves the needle if they're going to spend the requisite amount, like get over the 4.5 number or part with a significant asset. And as such, I think the under is the best bet.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to be surprised if I'm wrong. I'm not saying it's I feel like this should be priced at like -110.
Okay. So I'm happy that I set the line right then.
Yeah.
How low would I have to move it for you to be like, oh, smash the over? Like, if it's 4 million, are you like, oh, smash the over? I think once you get down to like 3.5, but even then, well, like
with 8 million in space, and you probably want to value hunt for a couple bodies here.
Yeah.
If you're the Canucks. So basically what I'm betting on is that they spread the money around on two different players and don't extend Pew Suter. That's what I feel like is the bet that I'm placing. And I feel like if you get to 4 or 3.75, I feel like I got to take the over.
To 4 or 3.75.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably once it gets below 4, I'd be like, okay, I think there'll be an acquisition of more consequence than that. But you never know.
How's this market going to react? I mean, if we'd said.
So I want to read this text because I actually think it's a fascinating moment for like this summer of all summers to be shaping up like this. And we'll see. It very much might not. I get the skepticism, all of that. But Jazzy texts in, I'm perfectly fine with this approach, but not at the cost of losing Hughes. I really hope he understands what the team is trying to do. There's another one, right? This text comes in. From Quinn Hughes' perspective, do you think he'd be more intrigued by a patient approach from management this offseason? Moves like keeping Volander, DPD, Lekaramäki, etc. Or would he prefer a more aggressive approach to rebuild the top six? Somebody else texted in like, man, I have no problem with this kind of cautious patient approach, but I wish they had decided to do it 2 years ago. There's this weird dynamic where a lot of our listeners certainly are kind of like, hey, this is music to my ears, but I have questions about the timing. And a big part of that, of course, is what does this mean for the goal of getting Quinn Hughes to sign when he's eligible for an extension 1 year from tomorrow? That's how we've been discussing the Canucks offseason, certainly, like through that lens, project keep Quinn Hughes. I don't think it's unfair to say that that has been a huge part of how the Canucks are thinking about their own offseason. So I get it. Like, I love that they made picks in the top three rounds over the weekend. If they want to be really cautious and not, you know, splash out on a very thin UFA market, that makes a ton of sense. You can see the wisdom in it, but I also think there are going to be naturally questions, one, because of the Quinn Hughes factor, and two, because of the expectations they set for themselves. So there's the kind of thing where it's like, I think a lot of fans are going to be like, I don't mind the outcome, but it concerns me that they set a goal and failed to reach it. You know what I mean?
Right. And especially because at the deadline too, not that they set a goal of selling, but like at the deadline too,
it was a missed opportunity.
It was a massive missed opportunity. But also, you know, it's like the market didn't shape out, you know, just like at some point as you know, is often said, like, this isn't the Tri-League, this is the National Hockey League, you know, like,
yep.
I understand that lens. I think if you'd told us a month ago that we would be sitting here the day before the market opens and all the Canucks had accomplished is trading for Evander Kane, I think if I'd like told fans that that was going to happen a month ago, I think fans would have been very disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so that's part of the pressure that you're navigating, but you have to resist the temptation. I think this is right to do something just to do something. That's how this franchise has gotten itself to a point where, you know, that they don't have a good enough team that they can approach the next 48 hours without urgency, right? But they also don't have as much cap space as other teams can, where you can go buck wild on a Mikael Granlund offer and have it not bite you, right? And they also don't have the asset capital to land XYZ player, Paterka or what have you, right? And sort of you go down the line and it's like, okay, so what are they doing? And they drafted a full draft class, a mm-hmm. fulsome draft class for the first time in a long, long time. They paid a little bit to bring in Evander Kane. They have prioritized doing extensions with Garland and
Thatcher Demko,
which we expect to be maybe the biggest news that the Canucks accomplish tomorrow.
I mean, I think you can pretty much lock in that one of those two will be the biggest deal they sign tomorrow.
Yeah.
And surprised if it wasn't.
And hopefully both get done. And well,
They announce them tomorrow, you never know. They might hold them, but
yeah, and it's an interesting one, right? Like, I think the risk on Demko is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the opportunity cost of that risk too, especially given what's happened to the goaltending market. Like, what do you think Jake Allen gets tomorrow?
That's a great question.
And what does that mean in terms of what Demko's trade value might be?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you are missing that opportunity in locking him up. And I do think we look at that deal as risky, but the upside is also understandable, at least. So, yeah, I mean, at the very least, they're positioning themselves to avoid the Besser suitor, you know, way that played out over the course of the season. Because let's be real, like, that's, I think, a big part of this story too, and something we have to talk about here, which is, you know, other than Mitch Marner, Brock Besser and Pugh Suter are the highest scoring UFAs.
Yep.
Right? Like, of the UFAs that had more than 20 goals last season, there's two teams poised to lose multiples, right? And it's the Canucks and it's the Dallas Stars, because Dodonov and Granlund are expiring. I mean, that's not the company you want to keep.
Nope.
It makes a lot more sense when those players are, you know, 36 like Dodonov and 33 like Granlund, and the Stars were in the conference final, than it does for the Canucks to be losing a 29 and a 28-year-old having missed the playoffs, right? And not having managed those values. Like, that's tough.
That's tough stuff. And I also just
think,
like,
the story here, right, is that the Canucks are honestly positioned a little bit uniquely in that they're poised, potentially, depending on how Suter things turn out over the course of the next 12 hours, they're positioned to actually lose talent without having mined any return in kind of a unique way. You know, the Jets with Ehlers is a bigger blow, but they made the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
The Leafs with Mitch Marner is a bigger blow, but they made the playoffs. Marchand, obviously, we're not going to talk about that one. Roslovic, his team was in the conference final. Granlund and Dodonov, their teams were in the conference final. Gaudette, his team was in the playoffs. Like, all of the top goal-scoring UFAs, their teams at least made the playoffs. And most of them went deep.
And I think that's a huge part of the context. Again, not to get pre-mad, because we'll see what transpires.
No, we're not getting pre-mad.
We'll see what transpires. But
I was born mad.
But
I'm
don't,
per,
you, don't have to, you don't have to get pre-mad if you stay pre-mad.
Yeah, I'm perpetually mad. So this is, I'm never pre-mad.
It's different.
It's a constant state of being.
But, you know, you floated in your piece at The Athletic today the possibility of the center depth chart for the Canucks going into next season of, like, Elias Pettersson, Filip Hedl, Atu Ratu, Teddy Bluger, and maybe like Radic Faxa Guy X, right? So those are like the five centers, and some of them might move to wing or whatever, but the five centers you're going to start in your lineup, or at least with on your roster at the beginning of the season. That's at least a potential outcome. And I'm not even saying it's wrong, but when you think about the gap between what they wanted to accomplish and if that is what transpires, again, that could easily prove to be the best thing long-term for the health of the team. There's 100% of reality where that's the case, but I'm going to be fascinated to see how they explain it to the market, right? That that's what they ended up with when there was so much talk about going in the other direction and such a sense of urgency about going in the other direction. I also think, like, man, you're going to Elias Pettersson, Filipetal, and then, you know, Atu Ratu, Teddy Bluger, veteran guy X. You are one Filipetal injury away from a very, very fraught center situation.
You don't even need a Filipetal injury to have a very fraught
center situation. And then it gets even situation.
Worse. Yeah, yeah, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, you're already at a point where Pettersson needs to bounce back significantly just to be at the level where he can be a difference-making top liner. Mm-hmm. Filipetal doesn't just need to stay healthy. He needs to perform better than he did last season before the injury in order to be an average even second-line center for you. And then you need Ratu to develop massively. And, you know, then you've got Teddy Bluger, and we know what he is. But, yeah, no, I mean, this is going to be a weakness. They're going to be bottom 10 in the league. Even if they reinforce it, they're going to have one of the 10 worst center groups in the league, period.
Like, quite easily, to be perfectly honest.
And they're probably going to rank there in terms of the quality of their wingers, too. So they're going to need to find some really creative ways to punch above their weight in terms of how they win games, because it's probably not going to be in by outscoring teams.
Yeah, and again, could that be long-term the best thing? Yep.
Totally.
But the way it's described, the way it's sold, I think is going to tell us a lot.
I'll tell you this, though.
And again, we could be talking about something totally different this time tomorrow.
Land a full draft class and avoid any significant errors across the next 48 hours. It's not going to be pretty. It's going to look bad on paper on July 2nd, but the games aren't won on July 2nd. Yep. They're won in September, October. How many years have the Canucks won the offseason and been trash? How many years have people been like, oh, do you think Pew Suter and Teddy Bluger are enough and the season's gone great? You know, I mean, it is a little bit unpredictable, especially for a team with this level of volatility. This team's success is going to be decided by things like, is Quinn Hughes one of the five best skaters in the NHL? Does Thatcher Demko stay healthy?
Yep.
Does Pettersson bounce back? Not by whether or not they land Mikael Granlund on July 1. Come on.
All right, as a reminder, tomorrow, July 1st, NHL free agency, Halford and Brough in their normal slot, 6 to 9. We're on from 9 to noon for a special three-hour edition. Dimitri will join us in studio, among other guests. Bick and Randeep take over for the People Show from 12 to 3, and then Sat and Reach will have you covered on Connect Central after that. So wall-to-wall coverage of July 1st free agency here. Join us on your Canada Day if you can. We're looking forward to it here on Canucks Talk tomorrow, Sportsnet 650.